Welcome to Incandescent Tarot, a podcast exploring how to integrate tarot and spirituality with everyday life. I'm your host, Gina Wisotsky, a pro reader and utter tarot enthusiast. Join me as we tackle big questions like why the tower is so intimidating and what it means to develop a spiritual practice in this wild modern world. Hello, lovely listeners, and welcome to the Incandescent Tarot podcast. I am so excited to be finally recording another installation of our segment, Ask a Tarot Reader. It's been a little while, and I love diving into these listener-submitted questions. If you have a tarot-related question you would like to have featured on the podcast, please go ahead and share it. You can do so at incandescenttarot.com/askatarotreader, and you can also just email me, info@incandescenttarot.com. And I created this segment as an opportunity to talk more in detail about the wild world of tarot, because there is so much going on here. There's 78 cards. There's all sorts of ways that you can read them. And I really value places where you can have discussions about this and get granular. So today we're going to be departing from tradition and just focusing on two technical questions. So usually we have a technical question and a personal question that we do a little mini tarot reading for, but these were just so good that I had to dive in and do them both. So we are going to start with question number one. And this person asks, why do you think the tens are so different from each other or not? The tens of pentacles and cups are so abundant, joyful, and triumphant, while the tens of wands and swords are overwhelming, burdensome, and a real bummer. I know there's a range of what they can represent, but I'm curious about how you'd explain their apparent contrast. This is an amazing question. I am so into it, and it is a really, really good point. So, as this person notes, the tens of pentacles and of swords are so different than the tens of cups and wands. And this is very interesting to me. So tarot is this, I like to think of it almost like as a shipwreck. So imagining that you have this structure, it's sunk to the bottom of the ocean, it's covered in all of these layers that make it a bit inaccessible. You know, we can't dive down there and live there. We don't know with clarity like how it got there, what the deal is, and I'm referring here to tarot's history. There's a lot of different ideas and theories about whether it was meant to be a divinatory system, whether it has all of this secret knowledge and esoteric power, or whether it's just a card game that people then have decided to use for fortune telling. So the origin story is murky, but we do have this structure, and like a sunken ship, a lot of things have grown on it. So I imagine all of these traditions and ways of reading and interpretations of the cards as like a coral reef, this whole ecosystem that has grown on this scaffolding. And because of this, there's a lot of ways to approach it and some really interesting mysteries. So one facet of tarot is that most readers, many people, look at it as a way to explore the human experience. And as such, it contains all of the different ways that we can interface with life, experience it, look at it. And I find that when you engage with the cards in this way, you can see some really cool commentary. Now, whether this commentary is coming from us as like modern interpreters or was there with some intent is up for debate. I'm always talking about, or 98% of the time, talking about the Rider-Waite-Smith version of the tarot. And this deck, which was published in 1909, was made by a mystical order. It was meant for divination. So there is a lot of intentionality here. The specifics of that intentionality are not always clear. So we have the Pictorial Key of the Tarot published by Arthur Waite, written by him. And as the creator of the deck, you get some insights, but not a whole ton. And his writings on the minor arcana are fairly cursory. They're not extremely in-depth. Now, all of this is to say that when you look at the minor arcana, which we're talking about here with the tens, there are groups. We have the suits and we have the numbers. And we can look at these combinations, these groups of cards, as having similarities or having attributes that say something. And so it's really fun to break them off into these groupings and look at them. So here we're talking about the tens. And if you do this with any group of number in the minor arcana, you'll see some themes. Now, as a group, the tens are all about, I like to think of them as like the, well, to be blunt, like as overkill. So if you are just going wild with the energies of that group, that's what you get when you look at the tens. So it's interesting to note here that some of the tens, if you go hog wild with them, can be lovely, at least at face value. So I'm talking here about the Ten of Cups. That image is of a family frolicking, cavorting under a rainbow. It is just beautiful, harmonious, charming, really sort of a fantasy of, or an idealized version of happiness. Contrast that with the Ten of Swords, which is a person face down on a beach with 10 swords sticking out of their back. Not so fun. So what is happening here? The way I look at this as a reader, and of course this is bringing in, you know, my positionality as a person in the modern world, and my approach to tarot, which is very humanistic and also, you know, informed by psychology. It's not entirely an esoteric practice, though it has aspects of that. But when I look at this, I do see a commentary and some insight into how certain things, certain facets of life, if we amplify them, if we just completely just punch up the contrast, just make them as vivid as possible, that certain things can compound, amplify, exponentially grow with ease and joy, and ultimately be quite positive. You know, little asterisks there that we'll talk about in a second. But for Cups, the rainbow family, that group of cards is all about connection, love, spirituality, intuition. These things, if we make them big and grand and invest in them, have the capacity to grow, and they can be quite lovely when we have them in excess. Now, when we talk about swords, the group of cards deals with different factors, different things, and these are things that don't do so well when multiplied. That is thinking, which I really find actually quite wise and helpful for me personally in tarot, is this idea that if you think too much, you end up face down on the beach. That is not a part of your life that you can amplify and grow unchecked without some consequences. We don't want to get lost in our heads. We don't want to overanalyze to the point of exhaustion. Now, some of the tens are a little more neutral. The Ten of Pentacles has this very, like, it's both chaotic and mystical. It's a very busy card. And in it, we see this archway. There's an elderly person in the foreground. Behind them is a family, a dog. It's full of signs of life, signs of civilization, plants. It's encrusted, basically. And this being the suit of pentacles, which is all about the world, about worldly things, physicality, resources, money, but also just daily life. That in this card, we have a more, it's celebratory, yes, but it can also be a little overwhelming, so to speak, this idea of a very busy life. And in that sense, that card, it's a little less judgmental. It's not making it's not making any statement, obvious statement for us as the reader. Now, the other one that we haven't talked about is the Ten of Wands. And this one is it's neutral to rough. And this is a person who is pushing, they're carrying a group of wands, 10 of them, they're sort of fanned out in front of them. They're pushing it, kind of hunched over, and they are approaching what looks like a little encampment, a house and a gate. No, there's not a gate. There's like a house, a couple buildings. They're in a civilized area. They are working very hard, but their view is obscured by these 10 wands. And so in this image, we see the difficulty and the spectrum of difficulty to danger of overburdening yourself. Now, sometimes, you know, overinvesting or being full up on wands energy, which is about action, ambition, creativity, movement, that can lead us to places where we are really struggling to maintain it all and having to push through some discomfort. So a lot of this is challenging. So we have, you know, on one end of the spectrum, the abundant beauty of the Ten of Cups. Then we have, you know, kind of more neutral Ten of Pentacles. Still looks pretty cool, very exciting. You know, moving down to the Ten of Wands, the sense of struggle, but still not in a frightening environment. You know, they're close to shelter. It's not a heightened card per se in terms of what's going on around the main character. And then on the other end of the spectrum, we have the Ten of Swords, which is like an actual faceplant featuring violent murder. So, you know, this is obviously a wide range. And interestingly, a lot of people, myself included, will look at the tens, and I like to think of it as like you're running a race and you go over the finish line, but you don't just stop on the finish line. You have all this momentum, you keep going. You have to remind yourself to stop, though, that the tens are like past the finish line and you're already transitioning into a new stage, ending the race, reaching a conclusion to something, and then having to start something new, walking off the racetrack. What's next for you? So in that sense, the tens are not actually the culmination or the fullest expression. They're like a little extra. Some people think of it as like the number one and zero. So carrying both the thing, the one, and the potential, the seed for the new thing, the zero. So as such, they have this sort of mystical component, and they're not a card of stasis. So if we look at the nines, which a lot of tarot scholars will speak of as the actual full expression of the suit, those are a little more contained and have an element of balance to them. Whereas the tens are by nature a little unstable. And I think this makes me think about the Ten of Cups too, having this, it's beautiful, but it's also not a final resting place. And maybe this is a thing that I love about tarot as well, is that it is a system that asks you to keep going, to keep on engaging with life, and to be on your feet. There's no finality to it until the ultimate finality, but you know what I'm saying. So I have a lot to say about the tens. I think to condense it down into a digestible statement is that the different tens in tarot, the difference in their emotional tenor, their imagery, has a lot to do with how certain energies you can amplify. Like this idea, of course, like love is not finite. We can experience so much love in so many directions. It's a renewable resource. So the Ten of Cups is beautiful. You know, that's an energy we can easily grow. We can experience at all times, all the time. Now, analysis, thinking, worrying, the shadow sides of the swords, those are energies that we cannot grow without some harsh consequences. So we see that in the Ten of Swords. that you'll end up collapsing under the burden of too much Swords energy. Now, I do want to say that every card, at least in the way that I practice tarot and a lot of other people too, but every card is on a spectrum. It's neither good nor bad. And cards that seem resoundingly positive, like the Ten of Cups, can also have shadow sides. So we can see this as being overly invested in a fantasy of happiness or of growing your feelings of connection and spirituality to the point where you are not grounded in your everyday life. So a little reminder that even the cards that seem just like, you know, bright and bushy and beautiful, they are not always going to show up in your readings, meaning that it's not like, oh, Ten of Cups, great, we're done. You have to look at the context of the other cards. Be aware that overdoing anything is not the path to a sustainable, balanced life. So I'm going to try and wrap it up here. I really am excited by this, though. I could go into a lot more. We could talk about the Wands and the Pentacles more specifically. But yes, to sort of sum it up again, is that some energies we can grow without really dire consequences and others not so much. And this is a little bit of a topic for further exploration. And I think something that makes the tarot a really helpful tool for modern life, especially, is that there is a bit of a corrective built in here that the most dangerous and detrimental, obviously, you know, in terms of imagery of the group, is the Swords. And I do think that is really reflected in a lot of our experiences, that are the way that we and our culture looks at the world, the way we think about things, actually has a lot of power to influence our experience for good and for bad. And so with the Ten of Swords, you see that energy left unchecked can be quite harmful. Okay. So, wow, almost 20 minutes talking about the tens. It's definitely not over, but we are going to transition into a new question. And this one is really beautiful. It's about the major arcana. So we're going to move away from the minors and talk now about the majors. And this listener asks, how does the star card relate to the star in the hermit's lamp? This is such a timely question because I was just reading for a client a couple weeks ago and this came up. This is a part of reading tarot that I find just so satisfying, is that you're essentially on a scavenger hunt for symbols. And reading with the Rider-Waite and a lot of other tarot decks and systems do the same thing, but there is this ecosystem of symbols and you are looking for them in your spread, and you're looking for connections, you're looking for pairs, groups, and sometimes you will find these really obvious through lines. And one of these is the Hermit and the Star. So in the Hermit, which is a minor arcana card, it's earlier on in the sequence, there is a very like legible hermit figure. It's this person in a gray cloak. So nice. I just love a cloak. They're in a gray cloak and they're in this very minimalist setting. So they're walking on snow. It's one of two snow cards. And they are holding up a lantern. It's really, they have a staff, they have a lantern. And in the lantern is a star. It's really kind of all that's going on there. And it's a beautiful image of turning inwards, walking away from distraction, walking away from the input of other people, of society, of tradition, and finding your own North Star, your own guiding light. And there's a bit of austerity here, like we need to detach in order to find that insight, to find that guiding principle. But once we do, it is... And of course, this is a practice. You keep on doing this. It's not like one and done. But once we do, there is this sense of guidance that is really priceless. So this card, and a lot of cards will have this, where there's a little shout out here. So the star and the hermit's lamp, we are looking at this. If we had a spread and there was the star card there too, it'd be like, ooh, triple underline, this is an important theme. Even so, sometimes you'll have a spread where you can read into the negative space what's not here. Sometimes there'll be a little like a breadcrumb trail in an existing card like this one. So if we just had the hermit, we might look to the lamp and think, huh, here's a star. What might the star card have to add to this reading? So let's jump ahead to that image. So the star is the beginning of the celestial sequence, as I like to call it, because it sounds very grandiose and fun. But it's in the late stage of the major arcana journey, and it goes the star, the moon, the sun. So there's this brightening, this intensity that is getting turned up when we go to the celestial bodies in the tarot. And in the star, we have this nude figure. They are kneeling down next to a pond. One of their feet is like on top of the water of this pond, and the other, their knee is resting on the ground, their foot's on the ground. And they have these two vessels. One of them they're pouring into the water, and the other they're pouring onto the ground. It's forming these rivulets. Some of them are feeding back into the pond itself, and others are going off, absorbing into the grass, the plants, going out of the border of the card. So we don't know what they're up to over there. And then they are surrounded, you know, there's this little kind of half circle of the water, so we can see that it's like drifting off. It's probably bigger than we can see in the image to the left. And behind them is this tree with this gawky little bird in it, this ibis. Anyways, it's a beautiful image of the sacred practice of coming home to yourself, of caring for yourself, of engaging in practices of rituals, the sort of pouring of the water, of nourishing ourselves with spiritual practices, all sorts of gestures that, and sort of a shout out to Minor Arcana, the cups, that amplify and honor connection, deeper meaning, our intuition, our connection with spirituality, however you choose to define it. And doing that, returning some to the pool of water, putting some into the ground. So like making it a part of your lived world. Another shout out to the Pentacles, which is the suit of earth. There's a lot happening here, obviously. And I like to think of the hermit's lantern, the star in it, as like if you were to go peer up into it, you would get sucked into the star card further along the journey. So maybe the hermit is searching for the practices, the embodied experience of the star, and that's what they're looking for. And that in doing so, like you're given this miniature version that you have to protect, grow, follow, so that ultimately you can be led to the landscape of the star card itself, which is bringing you far down into the major arcana journey towards the end. So that's so beautiful, thinking about these like portals, these both through lines, like sequentially, but also like a bit of a jump here. Like maybe there's an opportunity in the hermit, if we heed the call to understand ourselves, to skip, to jump over some of the sequence, or that there is an opportunity, perhaps, if this comes up in a reading, to really hop into some more knowledge in a profound way. And a lot of times, you know, modern interpretation of the star has to do with self-care. And I know we talk shit about self-care all the time, and it's a term that has been used ad nauseum. However, you know, we don't have time to go into all of the details, but I do think there is something quite powerful and important about the concept, and that this pairing really asks us to take it seriously, particularly with how the star and the hermit, but like imagining the star giving back to the source, nourishing their life and the lives of others. Like there's this interconnectedness that comes here. And the hermit saying that like following this journey towards a more embodied life, towards caring for yourself in a very holistic and, I would say, like global way. Like the celestial cards in tarot ask us to like open up to the world and participate in it. And as such, they're kind of radical. So there is something really beautiful happening there. Now, I think I'm at a point where we should probably wrap up because there's a lot of threads to pull on, but this is just sort of a nice way to sort of illustrate the ways all these cards are so interconnected and the ways through which we can widen our understanding of a tarot reading, of the cards, look at them in terms of how they might influence our lives. And for you listening, you know, thinking about that for you, like, what connections do you see here? Obviously, I'll have my experiences and inputs, but what's special about tarot is that it invites each and every one of us to make these connections, and they're going to be different, and that's very powerful. So I invite you to look at these cards and to think about them in your own life, in your own terms, and I would love to hear about any insights you have. So do go ahead and comment here, or you can go to Substack and find this post and leave a comment. But thank you again for listening in. I'm so glad to be back with this segment, and keep on sending those questions. I'll be recording more and back on the regular schedule for Ask a Tarot Reader. Until next time.